When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I had to go about it, write it out, and find it myself. And there's some stories I can tell you. I had to fail, had to fall.
It's the Final Word Cricket Podcast World Cup Daily. Adam Collins and Pam Ponsonby. The action today was at the Chinnaswamy Stadium at Bangalore. End of an era. England trounced by Sri Lanka. Cam, tell us about it in 30 seconds.
Absolute disaster zone for England. Got us around 40, 50 for none, then all of a sudden 160 all out. People were nicking off, people were getting run out conventionally, they were getting run out unconventionally. Then tables turn, never judge a wicket until both sides have batted on it. Turns out it was a piece of piss. Sri Lanka cruise home by 8 wickets. I think the stat is it was something like 59 overs for the whole match to be completed. Jobs are good.
Yeah, the quickest match of this tournament, 59 overs for Sri Lanka to obliterate England. And as I said off the top, really end the era. I should have said off the top as well that our show is for Westfield London, Westfield Stratford City.
Always.
More extra, less ordinary, more about them later. But yeah, everyone in the England side today was over 30 years of age, which in and of itself isn't a problem if they're winning. If you're an experienced side that's winning, so be it. But if you're an experienced side that's losing, that tends to suggest something else. It's over 3,000 days since that day when they played against New Zealand in 2015, when the white ball reset started. The white ball surged for England, and they've enjoyed so much success. They came so close to winning the World Cup T20 final in 2016, Champions Trophy semi-finalist in 2017. Of course, they win the 50-over World Cup at Lord's in 2019, semi-finalist of the T20 World Cup in 2021, champions in the T20 format this time last year at the MCG. And this will, in all probability, be the worst World Cup defence ever. In 50-over cricket, a lot's made of Australia and what they did in 92 at home. After winning it in 87, they came home and they finished, I thought they went worse than this. They won 4 games and finished 5th. Well, England, mathematically, I guess they're still in the tournament, but Matthew Mott, the coach, hosed that down very quickly and said, you know, we're not progressing on the basis of what's happened to their net run rate today, copying an absolute pounding. Cam, your initial impressions of what you've seen over the last few hours?
Well, I think it's one of those kind of rare examples of a match where you actually can talk about it in a macro sense because of what it represents. I felt like their team selection, they made 3 changes, and Wokes and Ali, Moeen Ali, came back in along with Liam Livingstone. They dropped Gus Axton and Harry Brook, the 2 people who were under the age of 30. And it gave me the impression of a kind of like, if we're going down, we're going down together.
Yeah.
This was the group that got us this far. Let's try again. One last show. And they've lost. Now, like, depressingly, they have to spend 3 weeks at their own funeral. Like, they're out, but they can't leave the country. But I think it's been a really good example of, and this is a theory I kind of take a bit too far, of you're never a better player than when you're outside of the team. And because of how much test cricket and because of how many T20 World Cups we've had, bear in mind, since 2019 we had COVID 2020, there was a T20 World Cup in 2021 that was meant to be in 2020, then there was a T20 World Cup in 2022. So the schedule has just not allowed England to focus on ODI cricket. Because of that, you've got your big guns not playing because they're resting, and because they're resting, they never had a chance to lose their first choice status. The only person from that 2019 group who isn't here is Jason Roy.
Right.
And he's the only he's the person who literally played the most ODI cricket. And so time kind of catches up with everyone, cliches and whatever. And England didn't have that opportunity to see that. We didn't have an opportunity to see these players kind of fall away. And the only time we had a showcase for them was the next World Cup. And I say all this, and I'm still kind of confused, because England are still T20 World Cup champions. Where they're going to go to a competition in about 9 months' time where they're the reigning champions, defending champions. It all could still work out. But it does, for you can say without being too hyperbolic, like, it is an end of an ODI era.
Yeah, I'd be very surprised if the side that fronts up for the T20 World Cup in America and the Windies is anything remotely like this one.
Yeah.
On the basis that I think there will be naturally I want to get on with the job of regeneration. And you're right, what you say is spot on. It made perfect sense that this group of players wanted to keep going. Nasser on telly at the end in his upsum said the same thing, in that all of the players line by line are worth their spot in the team right
Absolutely.
Now for this tournament.
100%.
There's no one you would say, oh, well, they needn't be considered for selection because they're not good enough, right? Even someone who's had a poor tournament like Chris Wokes, on paper coming into this was England's number one fast bowler in the absence of Archer, right? So everyone is here on merit, but now is the time to cast forward and move on. I saw at one stage, you know, there was about 10 runs to win. Joe Root was clapping as he went back to his fielding position. And then Chris Wokes was bowling the next over. He took his cap off and he gave Josh Butler a pat on the bum.
Yeah.
And it sort of said everything to me about these guys that have achieved so much together, but it being pretty much done. Butler, in his post-game interview, saying that they're now playing for personal pride.
Yeah.
I mean, it does glare, doesn't it, that quote. He said there's no clear answer. He can't put his finger on it. There seldom is. In a situation like this, when a team falls off a cliff, it's rarely one thing. It's kind of what you're saying. It's a combination of factors to do with scheduling, the format being deprioritised. And I am a huge fan of the World Cup Super League, right? I think what happened after the 2019 World Cup, we've talked a lot about it in reference to the Netherlands and the chance they've had. But the other side of the coin is that England went from playing 90-odd one-dayers between 2015 and 2019, when it was the absolute priority. Home World Cup, Owen Morgan made it so. Lots of seven-game series, lots of experimentation, and ultimately a selection policy. Well, there wasn't any real need for any selection drama, as Vish pointed out in our weekly show the other day. They knew precisely what they were doing. This time around, wholesale changes two games in a row. It speaks to that broader, if you like, discombobulation.
I think it is hard to defend England a bit here. I think it's almost impossible to have everything. So we go back and everyone talks about England being like this kind of bastion of test cricket. They're playing more than everyone else. It's where the format works. And so, and we need to save test cricket. We need more test cricket. There's two 2020 World Cups in back-to-back years. If you were then prioritising one-day cricket in those periods when it's T20 cricket,
it's impossible.
And they crash out of the T20 World Cup, you think, well, that's stupid. Why on earth would you do that? And something, there had to be something to, three doesn't go into two, literally in terms of the formats. I'm interested to know if this could actually force a way for even more specialisations with players. I think something we've learned in this World Cup is how different a format 20 over and 50 over cricket is. I find it really interesting when asking players what are the difference, is there a difference between the format? You get wildly different answers. And funnily enough, the people who haven't played much of either go, oh, it's the same thing. Or if they're not in the squad, they go, oh, it's the same thing. I can do it. And you have someone like Davin Milan who's like, no, it's so, so different. Mm. And we're having that example now. And I think that's part of the reason, to go on a bit of a tangent, why there's been so few close games. Because teams are able to score at seven and over. So teams are able to set 350, but no one has any experience of chasing those targets. They're still kind of kind of world record chasers they would
right,
be.
Yeah.
And so there is this kind of feeling that the format, players have lost that kind of, what's the word, the kind of tangible kind of essence of the of
maybe
the
like
game.
The muscle memory, right? Like,
exactly.
If you're conditioned to this England as they were, this England team were making 350 to 400 so routinely between, it was more, it wasn't just around 2015, it was closer you got to the World Cup, the more often they were hitting that, hitting the high notes, if you like. That Pakistan seven-game series immediately before the 2019 World Cup, haven't got it in front of me, but they must have hit 355 times, right? That was the way the game was moving. I don't think they've done it at all since that World Cup. And again, there's a COVID story in all of this. There's a side that hasn't been able to do the regeneration thing because they've got guys who understandably want to have one last go at this. And they're all-time England greats. The only player they've been able to turn over is Jason Roy. And that's because he got Shaggers back just before the World Cup. If he had played in that bilateral series against New Zealand, it's probably Davin Milan riding the pine because he may not have gotten the same opportunities in that series. And he was the guy who seemed to be teetering when Harry Brook was making a case through the T20s. Feels a million miles ago now, but you know, there's one player really, and if you want to include Jofra Archer in that, perhaps who has moved on, Liam Plunkett as well, I suppose. But generally speaking, it is the same group that took them to the top in 2019.
Absolutely, and I think it shows how an example today of how difficult it is to kind of cruise in third gears. When Teek Sharma comes on, I fucking love Teek Sharma.
Yeah, yeah.
Bowls like 64 mile an hour and spins it both ways. You've got slip standing on like the 30 yard circle with the keeper up. It's brilliant. He comes on to bowl, and Nasser's like, the old England would take him apart, but this England, I reckon, just let him bowl, take him for 0-50 off his 10. He bowled 8 overs, 2 for 20. 1 for 20, shit. He's got a 2s. He's got a 2s in the one-day game. It's so much kind of more difficult than I think we can ever really appreciate to kind of turn over the strike and go, take a spinner for 5s. I think I'm being a bit too friendly about everything. Let's go. What's up next?
No, there's more. I mean, we should quickly go through how the game all played out, right? So, Besto could have and should have been out first ball of the game.
I love it.
I blame Trent Boult and I blame Mitchell Starc because they took reviews first ball of the game, which backfired for both of their captains and looked rather daft. And I reckon that Cruchon Mendes thought, I best leave that in case it's hit the middle of the bat as well. It didn't. He should have had his pad blown off. And, you know, Besto has been... reportedly grumpy in team camp this week after the serialisation of parts of Bazball in the newspaper, and you'll hear more about that on The Final Word next week.
I think he got cooked a little bit for that. The headline saying like Besto reignites stuff. He spoke about it in August, and it's just the serialisation of the book. You can't say he reignites it.
Well, no, but I think the issue is that he's not happy that it's ended up in the paper.
Sure.
You say something on the record, it's going to end up in the paper. But yeah, then big Hench Matthews, bless. Fourth World Cup, called in as injury cover. Third or fourth ball, finds the edge of Milan. Yeah. They have to go through the review process. But, you know, there's something timeless about Angelo Matthews. There was a time when, I reckon, and this is digging into a little factoid that I was told, which may or may not be true due to the source of the information. Yeah. You weren't allowed to wear 69 on your shirt for a period of time.
Fucking quite right. But Angelo, embarrassing.
But Angelo Matthews keeps on keeping on and ends up with a cheeky two for today. You know, they had that mix-up, Root and Besto. I know it's probably more Root's fault, but, you know, strong Yorkshire, strong England and so on. Rajitha and Kamara, their responses to their first two wickets. And I want to pivot here a little bit to Sri Lanka, right?
Yeah.
They fucking wanted this. We spent so much time referring to England being in the gun, last chance saloon and all the rest of it. This is Sri Lanka's second game in those circumstances, in effect, because if you lose four, the whole framework changes. And they held their nerve against the Netherlands. They made 340-odd against South Africa.
Yeah,
they made 300-plus in the other game they lost, which at this exact moment, I can't remember who it was against. And against Australia, they were none for 125 before shitting the bed and losing 10 for 100 and Australia roll over the top of them. But they looked like they were going to beat Australia at that juncture as well. So they've had three losses, but back-to-back wins here. And going through it before we started recording, Cam, they don't have the worst draw. I mean, they play Afghanistan next up on Monday at Pune, which they should win in the league they're in at the moment. Then they've got India. You'd expect they would lose against India, right? All things being equal. Then Bangladesh, who are playing dreadful cricket right now. Then a blockbuster. Last game of the group stage It could be New Zealand against Sri Lanka for the final spot, even if Sri Lanka lose against India, which you would anticipate whenever they come up against them a couple of weeks' time. So I reckon that they're flat under the radar. We have thought because they lost two games early on. Oh, it was Pakistan was the other game they lost, making more than 300. So
their net run rate's
in pretty decent, Nick. Not quite as high as Australia's after yesterday, but it's not too far away from neutral, which is enough. You just don't want to be in negative figures at this stage.
They've been weirdly fine. The batting in particular, I think that's also why today was so devastating for England, is because this is a bowling attack that got taken for the world record total, or the world record World Cup total against South Africa. Mm-hmm. They've been conceding runs, but they've been scoring runs. You had Kusal Mendes scoring that incredible 100 up top.
Yep.
Nisanka's had four half centuries on the trot. Yeah. Samar Wickrama is averaging 98 for the competition.
He'd be one of the first names on the team sheet for the team of the tournament.
And they're going very well. And I think we all tricked ourselves. We forgot how long the competition was. Teams would go 0-2 or 2-0, and you'd kind of be blinded by who. Well, you wouldn't really take into account of who those matches were. And the length of the tournament allows people to kind of recover. And it's great that game against New Zealand in about 7 years will be a blockbuster. But it feels a hell of a long way away at the moment.
It'll feel a long way for England as well. I mean, it doesn't really matter who England have got. But for what it's worth, they play India at Lucknow on Sunday, where they'll be obliterated, all things being equal. Then Australia at Underbub with heaps to play for in England. England might be a frustration for a team like Australia. I mean, nothing to play for, but the chance to knock Australia out of the tournament. There'll be a frustrating side to come up against.
Absolutely.
And I expect what England will do is they'll give Gus Atkinson and Harry Brook the chance to play all these games. What's the point in Mark Wood playing from this point forward?
Yeah.
You're wrapping the guy in cotton wool at the best of times. You don't want him playing. I reckon they should put him on a plane, actually. Don't make Mark Wood be on tour for 3.5 weeks. Send him back to Accrington or wherever it is that he lives, and put him in a warm pair of tracksuit pants, put a hoodie on in front of the fire. I see some merit in just pulling the ripcord with him now.
You could literally, England now could go, right, who are our three most valuable players? All of you go and ping your hamstrings.
Yeah.
Get on a plane home, we'll call up three, we'll call up Will Jacks, Phil Soul, and change it around, basically.
Yeah, I don't think it's completely mad. So the other thing about Sri Lanka is I caught one little camera shot of Chris Silverwood towards the end of the chase. I mean, what a lovely moment for him. Jeff and I had the privilege of seeing Silverwood sat on the balcony at Gaul last year when Sri Lanka beat Australia in that famous test match, famous for what was going on around it with the protests and so on. Silverwood having gone through that dreadful experience in 21-22 in Australia, losing his job at the end of the series, and generally speaking, it just being a fucking disaster. He called home. You could see he was on FaceTime or WhatsApp to one of his relatives, and he had this huge beaming smile, and he was telling them that Sri Lanka had beaten Australia, and you could feel really tapped into that moment. So it applies today. I know that it's a couple of years on now, and I'm sure he has a high regard for those England players. A lot of them, he was part of their lives for quite a long time, right, as a specialist coach as well. But, you know, him defeating England, being responsible for the side that have done it, I think a word for Silverwood and his resilience.
Absolutely. It's the Chris Silverwood, Visakhapatnam derby, England-Sri Lanka. And it reminds me of, I think it was Daniel Sturridge, footballer, gave this quote because of, obviously, when you score against your old team, you're meant to be very respectful. And you kind of, I'm so sorry, fans. I didn't mean it. I can't believe I've done this to you. And Daniel Sturridge was like, fuck that. If I score against my old team, 90th minute winner, I'm going nuts. I've done over all my old mates. Everything is the best moment ever. And especially for like how kind of low, it was the lowest ever. It was when Silverwood left the England job, I think that was when England would have been 1-15 on the test record. And then they had the three matches without winning in the Windies, which took it to 1-18. Like he became this kind of comical figure. It's like, oh, we planned for this. I think in that same book, Baswell book, it will make reference to a story where Silverwood found out he was the mole within his own group. He kind of leaked like the Rory Burns thing, that Rory Burns had been dropped. I think that's fine to say. Yeah, we'll find out.
Book's out today, it's fine.
Perfect. I've read all of it. Read all of it. That's why I said it actually, because it was in chapter 7. Fast reader. It's incredible what I can do when I've really put my mind to it. But it would be a great day and great moment for Chris Silverwood.
Other bits and bobs from the game itself. There were two controversial moments in the first innings. One was the catch that dismissed Chris Wokes for a duck, taken by Samara Wickrama at backward point. The camera angles weren't crash hot, and I desperately feel for Ashan Raza in that situation. That's the first thing I want to say. Not his first rodeo as third umpire in this tournament, where people have been giving him pelters. And I still think that having a specialist third umpire in a situation like that is better than having an umpire who's been trained in a completely different discipline. Nevertheless, that is a call that, it's flip of a coin, isn't it? There is so much interpretation on angles that are far from conclusive. Right. And now we don't have the soft signal.
Yeah.
It makes it all the more difficult for third umpires because they can't do the old, soft signal, we defer back to what they said on the ground.
I was surprised. It's really blurry, the camera angle, so we don't know. Mm. That's the fundamental thing. I kind of, my instinct reaction was not out, and Stokes had the same thing where like, and the non-strikers, and he kind of crosses his hands over in front of him, was like, no chance, carry on. I've got this like bugbear basically, and this is not scientific. This is my own theory basically. But for me, it's when, if you see the hands scoop, like when they get to the ground and their hands kind of flick up, because if your hands flick up, it's because the momentum of the ball is going upwards, and the momentum of the ball is going upwards if it's hit the fucking ground, because it's bounced. So that surely just scientifically means that it's not out. It's kind of hit part of the ground.
Hey, if you're saying if it's the, because this runs up against,
it's this one, it's the digger,
the golf swing thing that you're actually in the ICC.
Very helpful visual movements for an audio podcast.
Yeah, well, you know, you can watch it on YouTube as well. Absolutely. Lots of people are. I'm sure a lot of people will be today after England getting pumps again, getting fucked, as I said the other day. The golf swing thing.
Yeah.
Bharat Sundaresan, could be the journalism from him, when the, you'll have to remind me, Cam Green catch off Shubman Gill, World Test Championship final.
Yeah.
Right? The advice given to umpires to interpret low catch decisions, if the swing's going up, they're actually meant to give it out.
Interesting.
They're meant to give it out on the kind of the, for the opposite reason to what you're saying, is if the momentum's carrying them that way, sure, it might have touched ground on the way through, but it's more probable they've taken the ball on the way through.
I want to know what physicists they've spoken to.
Yes.
Because I'm intrigued.
It's all vibes, I reckon. CERN. All vibes.
CERN? Switzerland?
Sounds about right. With vibes as well, we're going to move into a period, I think, with runouts, where the MCC are going to have their hand forced to provide more detail on ball being dead. Because, you know, the convention that the ball's not dead till both teams believe it's dead. That's how I've kind of grown up knowing the game. And
absolutely,
we went through all of this at Lords earlier this year, of course, famously with the Bairstow Carey palaver. But today, Adil Rashid, it's fucking sloppy. It's fucking sloppy.
Yeah, okay.
You know, he was just kind of like dozing back to his crease. And I think that I've seen enough cricket, I'm sure you have as well, where non-strikers have been run out when they've been lackadaisically walking back into their ground. Like, I think that can be considered dozy, whilst concurrently you can make the argument that Kushal Mendes, who took a great catch to get rid of Josh Butler, yeah. by the way, executes his brilliant direct hit ping. And remember, his captain got a million yeah. things on his mind, but he did kind of throw his glove off and intimate that he's throwing the cover.
I don't think
dead ball piece, the fake fielding piece, I don't think's unrelated to this.
I think it was really smart. I think the ball was dead. I think it was fake fielding, and I think it was out, basically.
On the fence much? You like it?
No, because I think it really shines. I don't agree that Rashid was dozy, because I think if you think of both him and Bairstow going back to Kerry, these guys have literally batted thousands of times in their life.
Yeah.
Rashid will never have got out like that.
Yes.
And the reason why is because he got duped. The ball's gone down the leg side. Mendes takes the ball. He looks and shows to cover. Everything's finished. The play's over, whatever. So I think conventionally, because it's this uncodified, like, constitution where you can kind of be vague, no one knows when the ball's dead or not, basically. And Mendes takes his glove off, hiding the fact he's taken his glove off, shapes to cover to throw the ball, and then it's like a quarterback where you feign one way and you throw across your body the other.
Like a baseball pitcher who's trying to run out of...
Yeah, yeah, picking off first
runner.
Base. Whatever.
Yeah.
Sporting references. And it's a great piece of work. It's incredible work. But for me, it just kind of made me think, well, I think this should be out. I think it is out. But it made me think we need to work out a way to codify when the ball is dead. Because it just reminds me of junior cricket, where a good mate of mine, Manveer, would keep wicket. We'd be 9 years old, and you just hold the ball until the batter eventually like got bored and left his crease and tried to stump them. And like the coaches were like, "You have to stop doing this. It's really
I think
annoying."
I like Manveer. We should interview him on the podcast.
And they're like, "We can't play the sport this way,
right?
Because it was just annoying. Because you wouldn't get through any overs ever." And then the same thing goes with fake fielding. You can confuse people in every form of the sport. I have no problem with fake fielding at all. For moments like this, where I think Kushal Mendes has been incredibly smart, but he has basically tricked Rashid into thinking that the ball's dead and then run him out.
I think the MCC will have to put out one of those statements that Fraser does from time to time to interpret what he has seen and what they have seen at MCC HQ. We'll wait for that one. But yeah, they brought in fake fielding for this reason. Let's not forget that. Like the fake fielding was brought in to stop batters being deceived.
Yeah.
And you could make that case, I think. But at the same time, great piece of fielding. You know.
It was great.
And Kushal Mendes on a roll. Made 100 earlier in the tournament. Going nicely at the moment. All right, Cam. Time for us to go to the final word, Hall of Fame. The final word.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hall of Fame is brought to you by Westfield London and Westfield Stratford City, and we're always grateful to them for it. We've spoken the last couple of days around a range of things, about half term. I'm not sure if it's half term anymore, but when it was half term, as it will be next time, kids eat free at a whole bunch of places when you go out there and tuck in. I was there earlier this week, as I mentioned with you, and there are so many places to eat. It's overwhelming. I grew up with Westfields in my life. In my orbit in Australia, because the Westfield name brand did start in Australia, Frank Lowy and so on. And it would be, at best, food court fare. And by that I mean, you know, Macca's, Red Rooter, KFC, Bob's Your Uncle. Maybe a bit of Subway if you want to get cosmopolitan. This is different gravy altogether. You go down there, there's this whole street, right? Sixers is on the street.
Yeah.
Whole fucking shitloads of stuff going on. Indian restaurants, it is class. And that is why I think you should try and make a point of going out there. Rach and I are going there next week. Rach
Wonderful.
And I are going out to Westfield next week to have a bite to eat. And I think you should too. And we're also going to go ice skating. Google the ice skating thing. We've mentioned that quite a bit. Biggest tree in Europe and all that. Someone said to us the other day, how do we know it's the biggest tree in Europe? Because it's the 25th of October and Christmas is 2 months away. Good technical point. But, I mean, they've set themselves a standard now, haven't they?
Well, they've said it's the big... We've still got 2 months to get bigger. We've got time to grow.
That's it.
That's why it's not the biggest in the world yet, because we have to get through to November when it carries on growing.
There's hair extenders you can put in. Yeah. So if the tree itself isn't big enough, I'm sure there's some way you can artificially. Anyway, yeah. Cam, you can go first. Your most final word moment of the day for Westfield.
just the one from me today. It was David Willey bowled a ball to Kusal Mendes, and it was a rank wide kind of half tracker, and Mendes leaves the ball. And Willie walks down, has a word, and he goes, "Fucking missed out there, man." You can really, really, really see from the lip reading. And the next ball, he bowls the exact same ball, and Mendes just like plunders it for four. And you're like, "Oh, David, David."
He's had a bad 24 hours, David Willey.
No, it's not gone well.
Didn't win today. Lost his contract yesterday. How about Big Angelo Matthews? Big Ange. We've already referred to him a little bit, but you know, the time he's been away from the bowling crease, striking straight away, 69 on his back. The way he ambled towards the boundary at one point to drag a ball in. He's a throwback. He's a beautiful throwback.
Yeah, I think you like him for the same reason. I'm not sure I do. I just fundamentally dislike anyone who plays with number 69 on their back.
Lance Klusener? Lockie Ferguson?
Fuck him. Mate, Ferguson's an exception because I used to dislike him, and then I found out he wears number 69 because he genuinely has a family connection to the number.
Oh, does he?
And he's not on a stag do. I don't know what the connection is. Okay. I remember I played a T20 once, and the lads walked out of 69 on his back, and I spoke to his team. I'm like, mate, this is so embarrassing. What is he doing? And he went, no, it's not a sex joke. It's his daughter was born on the 6th of September. And I was like, mate, give it a rest, mate. But yeah, I just think it should be banned. I don't think people should be allowed.
I'm not sure whether he should be sort of elevating that fact.
Yes, yeah.
People in dressing rooms can be horrible.
Yeah,
believe me, I've been there. So have you. The former skip, Jeff found this. Jeff spotted this.
Yeah.
Dimuth Karunaratne, who we love. Back in 2019, Dimuth Karunaratne's pool party was the final word Hall of Fame moment of the fucking tournament. We love Frankie Runes. Today, as soon as the six was hit to win the game for Sri Lanka in glorious circumstances, you know, fireworks going off and so on, he rips off the vest. He did not want to wear that orange sort of Bailey-esque vest. Yeah. He wanted to be on there on the field in his playing kit, and fair enough to him for it. Oh, and a word for Sri Lanka, having not lost to England in a men's 50-over World Cup since the opening day of the 1999 tournament. So, you know, Tony Blair, speaking of fireworks, the fireworks not going off properly at Lord's on a cold, miserly morning. Alan Mullally and Ian Austin bowling out Sri Lanka, and then Stewie making 88 and Graham Hick making a bunch of runs as well. That's a nice segue to say that if you really like the 99 World Cup, you'll be learning more about that on the on the final word feed pretty soon. Cam, as I reach up and hit the button on my phone to make sure we keep recording, that's a classy way to finish on YouTube.
Absolutely.
That has been it. That has been our show for the day. The next game in the World Cup is Pakistan and South Africa. This now becomes Pakistan's must win, right?
Yeah.
So we're going through teams mid-part of the tournament where if they start losing games that put them three or four losses in the can, they're going to find it difficult. So Pakistan, after losing two on the trot, need to bounce back at Chennai. England play India, as we mentioned before, on Sunday. Sri Lanka playing Afghanistan on Monday at Pune. And then also Australia are playing somebody on the weekend. They play New Zealand. That's a big game. They play New Zealand on the early game on Saturday. We'll be there for all of that. Jeff's on his way to Dharamshala for that as we speak. This has been The Final Word. It's the World Cup Daily. Cam Ponsonby, thank you as ever for your contributions. You'll be back soon enough. I'll be back tomorrow with Jeff, I think, or maybe someone else. We'll work it out. Thanks to Westfield London, Westfield Stratford City. More extra, less ordinary England. End of an era. George Benson. I ain't protected, brother. I ain't fenced in. My future questions, my current senses. That'd be the same we've been doing for centuries. Sorry if I ran out to empty. Wrote this so you know what I meant here. I had to go about it right.